Hey now. This is the Bachelor Masters coming at you from Los Angeles. You know, here in California, we have these things called propositions every election cycle, which are, they circumvent the elections, the elected office. You know, we elect people to represent us, but then there's this petition system where you can put something on the ballot to circumvent the legislation process. Does that make sense?
Well put. I think people are really confused about that. I love them.
Really, what you should do is vote no on all of them because they all circumvent.
I hate that. No, Craig, no. Representative democracy doesn't work ever. It's ridiculous.
I know.
And the props are direct. It's wrong. Bad advice.
Direct democracy doesn't work either.
It doesn't work because people are stupid and because you're brainwashed, you know, you get washed. But at the very least, you get a shot at something happening. But in theory, the yeses tends to mean some special interest group put that on the ballot.
They write them in reverse. In
generally,
You'll read what it's supposed to be for, and it's like triple negatives in order to make its point. So they try to confuse you so much. But the reason I bring it up is I have the TV on a local channel, KTLA. Yeah.
And every single
and it's
ad.
Every commercial is yes on this, no on that, yes on this. No.
And then there'll be a yes, a no, and a yes for the same exact prop.
Yeah.
Like in a row. It's great. <row. laughs>
Do you have propositions in Maryland, Caitlin?
No, at least I don't think they're the same sort of thing. I'm literally going into the other room right now and I'm going to grab my local voting guide that came in the mail.
your local jurisdiction probably has referendums and stuff.
Local stuff that's related to that, but they're not
anything tax related usually.
Yeah, I think the ones on the ballot this year are things like taxes going towards. I remember there's one about the public library system because I'm like, I always vote yes on the taxes to go to the library. Like that's my, I'm a single issue voter on
You're
that.
A single issue voter for libraries.
Yeah, basically I'm like, give them all the money. But they also have
not
ones
middle
I know
East,
that about like
not
school funding. I'm trying to remember if there's other ones. I know DC has... Sure. They DC politics, like local politics, I can't even understand, even though I've lived in this area before. But they
How
do
awesome
initiatives.
Is that sounds awesome. Yeah. DC local politics.
DC
that means
local
like,
is like extremely complicated stuff.
Right. Is it like they're just like super nerding out about politics, or is it that they're so corrupt that they can't even, you know, they're like in the city, but they can't reach it? Like, I'm so interested in that. That sounds so fun. To
what
way
I've understood from the past, certainly, is that it certainly was a super corrupt system for a long time. That it was like, there's like these. I'm literally going to Google what ANC stands for because I never know. But it's basically like local jurisdictions within DC have commissioners who are sort of like they work with the mayor and they're like the most powerful thing outside of the mayor. So you'll see a lot of. Like, I go into D.C. about once a week now, and I see so many ads for, like, ANC runners. But they do have on the ballot right now initiatives, including one to decriminalize marijuana, which I noticed because their posters are excellently designed. Like, I was just like, ooh, the graphics on this is so nice, and it comes in multiple colorways. And now I keep on looking at it to be it's called Initiative 81 Decriminalize Nature in DC.
I like it. Well, hey, so there you go. That's our electoral roundup
voter guy
week. Yeah.
Oh, God. I've just noticed, and I should have pointed this out, 81 is not just about decriminalizing weed. It's also about decriminalizing magic mushrooms, basically.
Ooh. See, that's the real score right there, is if you could pick up some mushrooms from the local weed shop. I have two within walking distance of me, weed shops. So.
Oh, yeah. That's very different than both D.C. and Maryland, where medical marijuana is legal in both, but recreational is not
Well, right, but it's de facto legalization when it's medical. Like, it's not you just have to like apply for a card, a $30. You just like a, it's just an entrance fee. Right.
Like, yeah, that's what I've been told because my physical therapist is actually like, you should get a Maryland medical marijuana card. They're super easy to get.
Your therapist is.
They're like, you know, it would help with your insomnia and your muscle pain. And I was like, I mean, that sounds pretty good. I think I should do that.
Yeah. I keep, every time I pass by it, I keep saying to myself, I'm going to go in and grab some lollipops or something, but or gummies. But I just haven't had a chance to. It's not like high on my list of priorities, but it's there somewhere.
A tangent story about the only time I've spent a lot of time in California. Hi.
Oh.
was going on this work trip with like my advisor and some of his other students and then all of these folks who were involved in this kind of cultural heritage initiative. And we basically did a road trip on the PCH, which was super fun.
Right.
But my advisor, I would say he's straight-laced in a lot of ways. And one of his master's students, we were talking about, we had a few days in San Luis Obispo because we were running a workshop there. And she was like, I'm going to go get some like edibles delivered to my hotel room and just chill out tonight. And
scandalous.
The advisor overheard her. And like one of the people on our team was like, they worked at a university in California. So this was very normal to them. And they're like, oh, you guys should all, you want to go to the dispensary later? We can all go together as like, you know, like a fun tourist thing, basically. And my advisor was like, oh, I've never done a drug in my life, basically.
That just the like disdain in his voice that you're doing, that would be me. I'd have man, I just, you know what, I just hate drug talk, sorry. I'm so like, I'm just really rude about it. I'm always like, come on, what am I? Well, it kind of fits in with Claire being like so immature and like loving that the guys are talking about her, but we don't have to jump into Bachelor talk yet, but it does kind of fit into that in my, like, I don't know, I think, yeah, maybe what you guys are saying is kind of applicable, though, because, like, growing up in California and drug culture being so common, like, Craig, I don't know if this is true for you, too, but, like, kids were doing drugs really early on, like really early on, too early. It stunts your development, always, like, anyways, even if you're doing it at 16. But, I mean, like, fifth grade, third grade, and I got so averse to it because it just seems like weird, like talking, like, why are we talking about this? Not
well,
you
doesn't
guys,
making
but
it
when
legal,
I was in third
like
grade.
Actually the numbers go down of people that abuse drugs when they legalize
I don't think so. No,
I think that's true. I think weed abuse has gone down in Colorado.
Well, I don't like, okay, what's abuse? What's addiction? You know, that where's the line? I just know that when you have like trauma growing up and you use drugs and alcohol to escape that, it has little to do with if it's legal or not. If it's accessible one way or the other, legality has something to do with it. And it's always been accessible.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess just maybe it's like a European thing or like never having been illegal or like even immoral in my parents' eyes. I've never seen it as taboo. So it's never been like particularly cool to me. So it's strange, you know, it's always been like a strange topic in my eyes.
Mm. Bottom line, you just don't like Caitlin's story about her trip on the PCH.
No, no. I totally understand. Like, to me, that like what the, I guess I've experienced so much the first part where the, you know, the, that's normal. And like, yeah, all the teachers and the, all my teachers have told me a drug story. All my, you know, what are they, like peers have, but then there'd be the one person who's like, oh, like just that feeling is me all the time. Like I normally do the ignore thing, but that feeling is definitely me. No, I totally relate in a lot of ways to that story.
Well, somewhat related short story, the same advisor was friendly with a faculty member who I'm close friends with, who actually, I guess maybe I should like do a shout out because I know he listens to this podcast.
Yeah, shout out.
Adam Kreisberg, who, not the advisor, but a friend of that advisor, had talked about going to a Fish concert with the advisor. And I was just like, I cannot imagine this advisor at a Fish concert because he just does not seem like that at all. But apparently he had a good time. So
yeah.
Who is this man? Who is this man? Adam Kreisberg, please reach out to us.
Adam is part of the reason I got into The Bachelor, actually. Can't remember what we used to work together.
He weaves in and out of our lives. Does. Like, and I don't know him.
Wait, we were talking about reality TV in general, and I said, you know, that I like really shitty reality TV. And he was like, what? And I said, you know, I've loved America's Next Top Model. So into that. And he asked if I watched The Bachelor, and I was like, no, you know, I've thought about doing it. And just like, I don't know, it seems like there's a lot of seasons. I just never made that commitment, basically. And he told me that a lot of academics are into The Bachelor and I should give it a try.
Right. And now you do a podcast on it.
And now I do. And I know that he's a listener because after I think the first or second episode that I recorded with y'all, he sent me an email being like, oh my God, you're on the Bachelor Masters podcast.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is more surprising to you, that there's an academic like Adam that goes to Phish concerts, or that he managed to get conservative advisor guy to go to the Phish concert?
I don't know. I want to know more about Adam. Tell me more. Right, someday, yes. Adam, reach out to us. Like, that's where my interest.
Well, we don't usually have guests on, but we could certainly make room for Adam. Absolutely. You know, speaking of shout outs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got a big shout out here for Wanda.
Yeah.
Woo, Wanda.
Woo. Wanda. Yeah. Wanda left a very flattering remark, I guess, comment about our show, The Bachelor Masters, on the Rose Pricks Discuss private Facebook group. And it was unsolicited. Excuse me. It was unsolicited and really cool. And she said really kind things about us. So thanks, Wanda. She suggested that we do more voices, because I think since Hannah B's season, Hannah was an easy target because she's from the South. Hannah B. But I don't know if we can do this. How do we do a Sacramento accent of Claire? Oh my God.
Is there a Sacramento accent?
Like, I don't think so.
There's a Sacramento stereotype, but I don't know about an accent. But wait a minute, Craig, why is that Rose Pricks group private? Or is it just not public?
It's private in that you have to join. They're not going to.
You made it
sound
like it's secret. Okay.
No, it's just
it's a secret society group.
You can post whatever you want, it won't show up publicly. I think how these work, right?
Oh. But sometimes they're like secret. That's what I understood.
No, this isn't secret by any means. And it's very popular. But Wanda said cool things and seemed to be excited to be communicating with me on the group. So I was equally excited.
And that's like really refreshing for Craig. He usually doesn't get excitement communicated with.
I know. Well, because we normally get shit on, like all of, I think me and Craig were like used to being like fighting people.
Yeah.
And deciding that, you know, at some point, I think I was very meekly like, well, this is my opinion. I'm so sorry. And now I'm like, fuck you guys. No, this is what I think. And I'm done like pretending like, you know, all these bad opinions are reasonable. Like, I'm done. So I think Craig and me Caitlin, you too. But since you're not on the online Bachelor Masters world as much as we are, it's harder for you to see.
Yeah, I don't run the social media.
Right.
It's kind of the.
I've said this before, but, you know, for us non corporate podcasts, I mean, we don't even do ads or Patreon. I mean, we make no money doing this. And I'm not saying that to look for pity, but little things like Wanda's post really mean a lot when you do it for free every week. Mm-hmm. Every week.
Yeah. This is like just a labor of love. For me, I'm like, I do this because it's fun to talk to my friends about this TV show.
Yeah, exactly. I do it because I'm like Walter White in Breaking Bad. I want to create a podcast empire.
Walter White. There's a million people you could have picked that weren't like a drug thing.
Well,
Craig.
There's a famous scene where he said, where Jesse's prodding him, like, well, why, if it's not about the money, why are you doing this meth thing? And he's like, I'm not in the money business. I'm in the empire building business. Because he wanted to create a meth empire. And it goes back to how he got slighted before the show started. He got slighted by his business partners. And they went on to make billions of dollars without him. So for him to make a meth empire is his way of like showing that he is just as worthy in this world. And that's the crux of the show.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's not about the money. It's about the power and like the respect.
Exactly. Which is why I podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, for the power and respect the power and garnering.
Dang, yeah. That power.
What we say here on Bachelor Masters goes. Okay. So anyway, follow us on social media at Bachelor Masters on Twitter and Instagram. And we are on Facebook, too. Just search for us. And if you want, you can leave a review on the Apple podcast app. That's very cool, too.
Yes.
Okay, let's get to it. The big scandal, we're not the first to point this out. The big scandal is that they didn't mention Claire having been engaged to Benoit after Bachelor Winter Games when they did the review of her Bachelor history. That's raised a lot of conspiracy theories.
Well, Benoit was supposed to be on the actual show before COVID, just to maybe like send her off in like a very patriarchal, like, you are no longer mine. Here is the transfer of power. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I mean,
that, I guess it's that's kind of a thing that they did with Hannah B. coming on Peter pilot season at the very beginning, right? To be like, oh, this is completely over. You're free to move on and check out these singles.
Except it completely was like inappropriate. And remember that?
That one backfired on him majorly.
She sat on his lap.
That's unforgivable. The rest of it, I don't know.
Well, it's still strange with all the editing power and millions of hours of stock footage. They didn't put that in as the fourth time she's been on the show. That was very strange.
Right. Fifth.
Fourth. That was the fourth. This is the fifth.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I guess because it was just too messy with getting him there. I mean, that's the way I can reason it away, because it's not really that pertinent to me, like, except for the DVD that they didn't explain. I had no idea what they were talking about. Did you guys?
Oh, yeah, because it came up on the, I think on the GOAT episode for Juan Pablo's season, they talk about it when, before her dad died, he recorded a message on the DVD that was supposed to be for, her and her future husband to watch together. When Chris was like, have you ever watched it? And she's like, no. And I also, you know, coming from the preservation background I come from, I'm like, I hope that DVD doesn't have like...
Oh, this is so funny. I was biting my tongue.
I was like, where's the 8mm?
I was like, it's going to degrade after like 10
I'm like,
years.
Oh no, she hasn't migrated the files to a new format. I mean, I wonder if it's going to even be readable.
Yeah, the emulsion on a recordable DVD like breaks down after 8 or 10 years or something.
Which would be like... That would be so... Can you imagine that moment of like... She's been saving this message from her deceased father, and it's just like, cannot Jelly. Play disc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. See, this is why VHSs are much more reliable, because say what you will, you can always transfer them like from the little plastic, because the actual film part stays intact for 40 years.
True. I guess still got to worry about like temperature and things like that to a certain extent, but not as much with like... Sure. Film, like 32 millimeter
and stuff. Right. I've had to do that before, where I take them out of the little plastic case and put them in a new one. But in terms of the actual film staying intact, it's like, I mean, you know, this is neither here nor there. But I really, really do like, I simp for VHS. Like, I'm a big VHS fan.
All right. That's
right. Anyways.
Media format roundup.
Yes, so that's what they were referring to with the DVD that Chris brings up, which I immediately, part of me is like, I don't want to hate on this idea, because when you have like a parent who's died and they've left you something, you know what I mean? Like, that's obviously really sentimental and valuable in this way, and it's emotional. But I'm also like, you know what I hate is that her dad's message wasn't a message for her to like, you know, like, read this on your 30th birthday or whatever. It was like a message specifically like for her future husband. And I'm just like, I wouldn't like that.
You're not valid until you're married. Right. Crap.
Maybe like we're supposed to be so sympathetic and not say anything. But I mean, like, what could be on that? I hope you guys are happy. I love Claire. This is awesome. You guys are now married. Like, there's going to be like the keys to the treasure or something. Like,
You don't go have to these coordinates about much. With a shovel.
Yeah. Like, it's going to be special, but it's not going to be like.
Get the idea of being like, because he won't be around to meet somebody who presumably she will, you know, spend the rest of her life with and be this major factor. And like, I don't know, could be the father of his grandkids, et cetera, that like, this is a way to like meet them without meeting them. But yeah, I just, I would rather that like, that,
yeah, there you go. Yeah, that makes
the
sense.
Patriarchy-ness it's of for it the to dad. Be like,
it's for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, sorry. It's for the husband. It's not for, really for Claire or for the deceased person.
That's the thing that I think makes me feel uncomfortable about it, is it's not like, here's a thing for my daughter to remember me by when I'm gone. Yeah. It's like, that it's for the husband, and that like it is the whole thing's predicated on the fact that of course she's going to get married, that obviously she could never, you know, not get married. That would be insane.
Yeah. That's another thing, is like, she seems pretty in terms of being okay without having been married for almost 40 years at this point, I think 40. What's the big deal? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, she's not married yet. Okay.
Was the DVD made out to be a big deal, or was it just mentioned? Because
it was definitely mentioned, but I think it was pretty brief on this. It was something they talked about, like, she talked about it, like when she was on Juan Pablo's season, it was like part of her intro package, I think, or something. Like, it was definitely something that had been talked about, as like, oh, this is going to be a special thing. And it was pretty small here. I think Chris just brought it up as like, if you had followed that storyline many years ago, you would know what he's talking about.
I guess if you watched Greatest of All Time. But, you know, it's also frustrating because this whole episode seemed so, like, we're supposed to feel so bad for her. Every 20 minutes, there was a cue that she had to be, really sympathetic. That's how it felt to me. And these are all standard things. Parents die. You might not get married. Like, these are not things that are, like, you know, your family went through a civil war and you were an orphan. Like, these weren't uncommon things that have happened to her. And having to feel, like, so bad for her through the whole episode was a little bit, it wore on me. I'm like, come on. Like, come on. Like, that's enough, sympathy, empathy things going on. I don't know if you guys felt that way, but maybe because I'm already frustrated with her. But I was so, like, okay.
I was more focused on her,
we get
her
it.
Dress.
Oh, Craig, you hated that dress. And I thought it was going to be so much worse than it was on your text messages about
horrible.
It.
It was just a mirror ball.
Yeah. Should we hit like the fashion
crack mirror look? Oh my gosh.
Should we do it now?
I haven't even talked about the show yet.
No, yeah, I think we should save. We'll talk more about her dress later.
Okay, we'll save the dress.
I think the sympathy thing definitely worked on me to a certain extent. Like, I still always get this kind of vibe from her that she seems inauthentic in a way, right? But that I was sort of like, oh, these are things I didn't know about her before that do make me feel softer towards her in a way, you know, that like,
right.
Maybe not that they're unusual, that, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, your parents will die at some point in time. And her mom has Alzheimer's, which I think hadn't been mentioned on any of her previous show appearances. And maybe that has developed since then. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was like one of those things where you're like, oh, that does put things like, it reminds you that she's like a human and not just this caricature in a certain way, you know?
I mean, I feel like all the bachelors have it. All the contestants have it. Yeah. Yeah. It's just hard for me because they're trying really hard to do it. It's difficult for me.
Yeah.
To be...
I think they are trying really hard, and definitely the stuff that was about like her mom and her abusive relationship past worked on me way more than the stuff about her being like, I'm 39. This is my last chance, which they say so many times. And I'm like, you're not dead. You're just like almost 40, you know, like people in their 40s and 50s can have romance too. It's not. Yeah.
Well, she's like obviously specifically talking about children.
True. There is that level. I wonder if, I mean, I don't think they'll ever talk about this on this show, but stuff like, you know, has she frozen her eggs? Because that's a thing you can
do. Right. That's if she's that I mean, she went on Juan Pablo season with a fake pregnancy belly. Is that her end goal? Is that all that matters? Right. And if that's all that matters, that hasn't been mentioned at all, but it's hinted at too much.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what they're getting at with her age thing. Right.
There's a fertility cliff there issue that can be talked about. It's not a big deal.
Bring that up specifically, which is kind of interesting that they're not like, it's not that, you know, every time they say she's 39, the vibe I hear in my head is like this old crone, basically, is like how they're saying it. You know, like, I'm 39 and I just don't want to die alone. And it was like, whoa, you're not like, you're not even close to that yet. But I think it would make more sense to me if they explicitly said, like, you know, I really want to be a mother. And, you know, that's harder at a certain age. So, like, that means it's more important to try to find somebody, like, as soon as possible versus being like, you know, maybe I won't meet the person until I'm 50 and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just feel like this isn't something that happens on The Bachelor or Bachelorette ever. But, yeah, things like, well, has she looked into freezing her eggs or what she might want to do with like IVF in the future, like that kind of stuff, because there are certainly options. Women do have kids in their 40s. It's not like unheard of. I mean, I think the oldest person to have a kid was in their 60s, right?
Yeah, there's lots of exceptions, but I mean, the pool, I mean, you know, you're not going to be an exception. Like, I mean, you, me, her, we're probably not going to be exceptions, but I'm saying that that's what they're getting at. And they're not getting at it. They'll never get at it. They're just saying it as if it has to do with looks and with some kind of decade marker. They're getting at fertility. And they're never, ever going to mention it. And that's frustrating because just fucking mention it. Like, say it. Say it once.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's also, like, not unusual, and you know, like a lot of people have fertility issues, so I feel like it's not at all, it would be like relatable to specifically bring that up
from a man's perspective, hetero cis man's perspective. You know, there are plenty of guys out there that are not afraid of talking about kids as well. Like, you know, when you're 40 and you meet somebody, let's say two people, man and woman, they're both 40, yes, it should be talked about kids early on, because you know, there is a biological, what did you call it? Cliff dive?
Fertility cliff.
Yeah, fertility cliff.
So, I mean, it's a real scientific term.
But there are
term.
Plenty of men out there that aren't afraid to say, yeah, I want kids, and let's talk about it early on in the relationship. And, you know, so maybe Dale's like that, if Dale's the guy that she ends up with.
And even more so with the fact that she is, she's the bachelorette. She holds the cards. She's in power. She could say it night one, be like, if you're not down to have kids, get out. Like, you know,
Right. There's
no bigger
that's true.
Form of having the like actual pulling the, you know, whatever, holding the cards place than being that person. You're not really going to get that in a regular dating scene, maybe online, but there you're, you know, still like a toss up as to who you're going to run into. If you put that in your profile, people could look at you crazy that actually do want to have kids, because you kind of have to like weave in, you know, like slowly make it acceptable to talk about. Okay.
Well, this was,
wait a minute.
A plot point on Selling Sunset, actually. I don't know if either of you watched that.
No.
You know, I love trash TV, but they do have like, it's like an older woman marries a younger man. One of the main characters is the older woman, and they have explicit conversations about her saying, like, I know you say you want kids someday, but the thing is, like, we need to decide pretty soon, because like she's in her mid to late 30s. So like, you know, they need to know, do they want to freeze her eggs? Do they want to go down this other route? Do they want to try to have like a natural conception, et cetera, et cetera? Like that stuff all becomes more rushed when you're in that place where it's going to be harder and there's more risks with the baby, and you're sort of in that easier, I'm sure you've heard this, the geriatric pregnancy zone, like Claire's well
in. I wasn't geriatric, but I was like a mature or advanced age. I was like, sad for me. And it's true, you know, like our eggs don't last forever. What's it called? Like politically correct science. Like I can't say, hey, you paper, don't talk to me like that. No, it's true. My eggs are older. I have to, like, it's the end of the line here.
Yeah, I think Ether, you have a really good point. She's the person who's in control of picking who stays and who goes and who she wants to end up with at the end. So it would be, like, it's much easier in this situation for her to be like, listen, I want to have children, which means that's going to happen in the next, like, year to 2 years. And if you're not interested in having kids on that timeline, then we're not a match. So goodbye.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, there's a... I know Selling Sunset, I've been actually trying to think about... I've been considering thinking about maybe watching the show because I know that the guy from This Is Us broke up with the woman from there, like, with
it's so dramatic. I'm
so interested in that. But I really... Well, that's a side note. But I really hate how either... having kids has to be this huge plot point or not mentioned at all. Like, why can't we just have a mention? You know, Claire can just say, yeah, it's on my short list of things I want to do now. But we either have to go into, like, fertility clinics and IVF and looking up things and talking to people, or we don't mention it at all. Like, come on, let's have a middle ground here. Like, it can be talked about without, like that's what bothers me, is that there's just this, like, either intense pressure or we're completely hiding it, and I'm like, come on, people.
Yeah,
I think another pattern I'd noticed, particularly in, like, the first part of the show when they're sort of introducing Claire and things like that, is that there was a lot of, you know, whenever they would talk about her age, it seemed like both Chris Harrison and, like, the various men commenting on it would sort of waffle between, you know, implying that, you know, she's about to essentially die because she's 39, and being like, she's so strong for still being single and, you know, like, really hot for 39, you know, like that kind of thing.
People don't know how, don't you think it's because people don't know how to react? It's like, why are you telling me that number over and over again? And if we were just clear about that, there'd be a lot less implicit, you know, well, I don't want to say implicit bias because it's not, but this kind of, like, what am I supposed to think with that number? If you're a man walking in and you don't know, the trope is true. Men are pretty clueless unless you go, I want to have kids. Like, you know, I can see why they're kind of, like, confused as to what they're supposed to say. Like, everyone who goes on The Bachelor is a good-looking person. That's a given. So to say that, she's pretty good-looking for 39, like, what are you going to say? You're really out of, like, you know, go-to tropes if that's what they're giving you.
Yeah, and I think also, like, I guess this misconception about, like, women and aging in pop culture in general, you know, the idea that, like, at 39, she might as well be dead. I can't believe she's still hot, you know?
Yeah. It's this thing. Well, what do you guys think of that? The start of the beginning of this episode was like, oh my gosh, just speaking about it being fake, as if Chris Harrison picked the Bachelorette,
right.
And then, like, she didn't know she was going to be picked, even though there's a whole ass camera crew in her gigantic house that she can't keep her mom in. Like, I'm really confused about that. Like, did the mom and her used to live together?
Well, what struck me is while she's in her bedroom answering the call from Chris Harrison, right? Behind her was her bedroom door. But the door handle was not the kind of door handle you would have in a bedroom. It wasn't like a knob. It was a it was a handle.
That struck
And then above the handle was a deadbolt.
So you
wouldn't have that.
Oh, she probably Airbnbs it then.
Well, she probably lives in the guest house of some big house, I think. That's the only thing I could take from that, because why would you have an independent deadbolt on your bedroom door?
Dang,
and a hotel.
Right?
It's a hotel.
Did you
handle.
Tweet this?
No.
Well, you should.
That's some keen Bachelor Masters insight here.
Yeah, Craig's conspiracy theory. I think the Airbnb make sense, honestly. That, like, she might be renting out rooms in that house or something like that.
Wasn't that the house from, like, Home Alone? Like, that's a big-ass house. Like, that's a huge house. Have you seen that house?
Like, I wrote notes on the episode, and one of my notes is, like, Claire's house is massive.
Yeah. Right. That's her house to herself. She can't, Like,
as far as we know, we don't know.
Right.
She could be renting the guest house.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Renting.
She could have roommates that they don't.
She could be a hoarder and it's full of stuff, and then she has to live in the guest house. She can't.
I mean, her dad might have left her the house or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess that's a possibility. Doesn't she have siblings too? I can't remember how many, but I feel like there were several.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the door handle really was confusing to me. But they're like, here's a film crew to sit with you while you answer this call.
Yeah.
Where you can act surprised that Chris Harrison is asking you to be a bachelorette.
My deeper question here that has to do with what we saw is, like, do people legitimately like Chris Harrison, like, love him? Like, now he picks, or he appears to pick, the lead because people are so in love with this guy, or they've grown up with, like, I don't feel that way.
People have grown up with him. I think there's a certain attachment. Yeah, for sure.
Is there really, or is it top down attachment? Like, did they decide that we're attached to him?
Well, and now if it was anyone else, they'd be attached to that person too, but it just happens to be Chris Harrison.
What I'm trying to say is, was there an actual fondness for him that the producers picked up on, or are we supposed to like him?
Well,
like, I don't feel like there was an actual fondness that got created.
What I took from it is that he stays in contact with a lot of former contestants, like, on a personal level.
I'm talking about the audience.
Yeah, but someone's got to call and tell her that she's going to be the bachelorette. Why not have it be Chris Harrison? He's probably already talks to her. So they filmed it. I don't see that being such a big deal.
I'm talking about the connection we as the audience are supposed to have to this host. I don't think it existed until they forced it on us.
He's the talent of the show.
Like we mentioned before, you know, there used to be a time where hosts were kind of replaceable. And I feel like Alex Trebek's and the Chris Harrison's kind of changed that to make them somehow more than a two-dimensional character. But they are... They're supposed to be. That's the point of a host. You're supposed to be invisible because you're just supposed to facilitate.
Right.
And when they start getting opinions, like, I think Chris Harrison's opinions tend to be rude to people and wrong and wade into racism.
The live shows.
Sure. Yeah. I am frustrated that he's supposed to be some kind of beacon of, like, almost like an overlord. Right. He sees all. He's incredibly objective, which he's not.
He's divorced.
I'm kidding. No, I don't care. That doesn't bother me. But the rest of it bothers me that he's supposed to have this, like, bird's eye view of everything that's going on. Therefore, he is the final word. And I feel like a lot of the time he said things that are rude, wrong, racist, everything. So I don't like that he has this, like, quote, power.
Yeah. I was kind of laughing at, I guess this is like skipping ahead slightly, but when they're all getting their COVID test results communicated to them at the La Quinta, that Chris Harrison goes to tell Claire, and that's like a scene where you can see it's him telling her,
like,
you are COVID free. You're ready to mingle. But then when they show some of the men getting told, the person telling them is off frame, and it's clearly not Chris Harrison. It's some producer.
Well, he's only got so much time in a day. He's got to focus on Claire.
True. There's, it did make me laugh that
again.
Like,
you're just man defending him.
Don't see who it is. But yeah, I don't know. I don't feel any affection for Chris Harrison. He's just kind of there, in my opinion. But I guess we're supposed to like him. I'm not sure.
I just want to say this. I feel like, given the anticipation for this season, the, you know, 6 months we had off, the amount of time they had to put this together, the odd circumstances, I think they actually did a really good job with the 2 hours. There, I said it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I agree, because it was different, at least, than the normal crap we're used to seeing on the first episode.
Well,
you
and I have said this before many times, where it's like, we don't like extended limo exits sequences. Like, so they abbreviated the limo exits, because sure, they went on about COVID a little too long, maybe, but the limo exits, I felt, were just the right amount of time. You got to know them quickly, but we didn't dwell on them. They didn't feel like they were going on forever. And then they cut. And then by that time, it was already, you know, 15 past the hour. So there's only 45 minutes left, and they did the rose ceremony stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, they kind of were saying, oh, this is the hardest thing to show up for. Like, what would you rather be, quarantined? Or like we were, or on a set of a show partying with 30 other people. Like, this is the easiest bachelorette to show up for. If you pass COVID, if you don't, you know, come on, do it. Have fun. Like, you know, that kind of narrative of like, you sacrificed so much to be here. Like, no, you were probably furloughed or laid off. You're dying to get out of the house. You're even better. You have a free stay somewhere, hopefully for a long time. Like, the whole show kind of
that
flipped.
Was kind of a weird. It was like, oh my god, I'm so glad that these men showed up in this like tumultuous. And I was like, well, for the majority of them, like, they're at home otherwise, either like because they're working from home or they've been furloughed or, you know, whatever else. But like, this is one of the only real chances you would have to go on like a fancy vacation somewhere that's also being paid for, you know, and to be able to date somebody brand new with very little risk, right? Like, yeah, it seems, yeah. I was like, this seems like an even better deal than being on The Bachelor or Bachelorette normally.
Yeah, you don't have to skydive or jump off some bridge or, you know.
Well, not even that, but including that, yeah.
And the resort looks nicer than the mansion. I was like, this place looks pretty good. I think I'd rather be there than in that mansion.
From our countdown episode, I've stayed there. So... I know. It is nice. It's not like extravagantly nice. Like some places.
It looks like
stay
a regular hotel room.
Yeah.
Look at my hotel room. Like,
very
regular hotel rooms.
What makes it unique though is that each hotel room is part of a pod of hotel rooms that all face a pool and a hot tub. So there's like
a motel.
I think there, you know, they advertise there's like 31 pools, you know. No matter what room you have, it's always going to face a pool. Because you see what I'm saying? They have pools, and then they surround the pools with the rooms.
Yeah.
And then they multiply that. So that was kind
of... You know...
You have your own private pool, basically, with maybe...
That sounds great, honestly.
Eight other rooms. Yeah,
exactly. What I think was also a real bonus to me is because they had to isolate... They were all getting their own rooms too.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
As opposed to in the mansion where they're like sleeping in those weird bunk beds that they've occasionally shown.
Yeah.
I was like, this seems like such a nicer, more comfortable situation.
Yeah. And I appreciated that they gave the guys rooms with two beds. I don't know if you do this, but if I'm traveling by myself, and I have the option to, I'll request a double bed. Two beds.
So you can put your luggage on.
Yeah, so you put all your stuff on the other bed. Exactly.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And yeah, everyone I'm with, like, you know, my kids, everything, will sleep in one bed, but we'll use the other bed for luggage and stuff because we don't want it on the gross floor.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like the guy.
I thought you were going to say that you request two beds so you can alternate which one you want to sleep in on any given night.
Right. I want to get closer to the window.
It's like switching it up on a night-by-night basis.
I like the guy, that the army guy that was like, I'm used to psychological warfare.
Yes.
Psy-ops in my room. And he was just like doing like yoga. And you're like, you're not in ice. You know, you can turn on the TV. You're not in like whatever the hole in prison. You can.
Yeah.
There's a lot. More.
I'm sure you can go swim in the pool.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know if they could before they were like officially cleared. I don't know if they were allowed to use all the facilities or not. Right.
That's
true. Because they were doing it the way that places like if you went to Australia now during COVID, they make you stay in a hotel room for 14 days, like literally in that room. You can't use the facilities of the hotel, like food is delivered to you, that kind of thing. So if they were doing that model, then my guess is like it's literally just whatever is in the room. But I do wonder if they bend the rules on, you know, like in the normal times, they're not allowed to use phones or like watch TV or like have books or stuff in a lot of the cases. So I wonder if they allowed them to do that stuff now, because it would be really cruel.
You heard this rumor that during filming, Chris Harrison left the show to go drop his kid off at college and then came back and had a quarantine. So the rumor is that JoJo comes in and hosts the show for a week or two. Did you hear about this? This is big news a few months ago.
Yeah. Okay. No, I don't remember hearing about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, and honestly, like, who cares? You know.
Well, it's on topic.
Yeah, it is on topic.
I brought it up because we're talking about quarantine.
I'm not saying who cares what you say. I'm saying who cares that that happens.
Okay. What's next?
Okay. So
we could talk about the men.
Craig, we don't.
Ooh, also,
yeah, we could.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. I was gonna say I wanted to talk about the men and their opinions on testing because. Well, there were a few things. I wrote down one quote, and I can't remember which guy said this, but it was making me laugh. And he said, you know, we all have to make ourselves available and healthy for Claire. And I just thought it was so funny that, like, isn't that a way that you should probably prepare for the Bachelor or Bachelorette in general, not just this season, is, like, make myself, like, really available and healthy emotionally and physically to go into a relationship. But they're like, quarantining is different. You have to do this now. That the men really hate wearing masks. A lot of them were like, oh, God, I got to wear a mask. Several of them that they showed, at least, were all acting like the test is the worst thing ever, which was kind of funny to me in terms of,
you've heard of the test.
Well, I've done it, yeah, and it's not comfortable. You're putting a thing up your nostril, and your eyes do automatically cry, but, like, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
I think I would be like cringing like they did.
Because you're a man, Craig.
It's true.
I don't want something shoved up my nose and make me cry. It sounds awful.
Well, it's like man cold and man flu, you know, like how men overreact for being sick in certain ways. You've all heard that, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's the same kind of thing.
Enlighten me.
Oh my God, you haven't, Craig?
Yes, he has.
No, I'm serious.
Craig, oh, okay, well, men are babies when it comes to being slightly uncomfortable about anything.
That's basically what it is.
And yeah. I'm sure the Navy SEALs, when they're, like, swimming under the ocean to attack a port, they're real uncomfortable.
For some reason... Like, I feel like if we're going to Freud women all the time about wanting to sleep with their dads and stuff, this is the same thing to me. It's like they want to be babied by their moms, like, all over again. They want to be like, I'm sick. Like,
yeah, that's
so,
literally what
so annoying.
Man cold or man flu is. It's that, like, men get a cold or the flu and they act like they're literally dying. It's the end of the world. They want their partner to take care of them like they're a baby. Whereas women often get those same exact things and are just kind of like, gotta deal with this shit, you know?
I don't feel like I fit into that category, but I guess.
Yeah, some men most certainly do. And I was definitely getting that vibe from, like, I can't remember which guy it was because they're all so, like, blurring together for me at this point. But the one guy who was just like, you're putting it up my nose.
I wouldn't like it put up my nose, but here's a true story. So my dad, he always said that he never used Novocaine when he got his teeth drilled and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And growing up, I was like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. What? And he's just like, it just doesn't work. So I just don't have them go through the process of sticking me with the needle and waiting 15 minutes. He'd just rather get on with it. And I'm like, man, that is crazy. Well, as I got older, I realized that Novocaine had less and less of an effect on me. I don't know if I inherited some resistance to Novocaine or lidocaine or whatever. But the last time I had a cavity drilled out, this was a couple of years ago, they did the needle. You know, I could feel it numbing, but when they started to drill, there was no help. I could feel everything. And the doctors are like, oh, wow, you know, well, we'll put some more in. And I'm like, you know what? Just do it. I don't care. It hurt, but it was hurting some other body. It was kind of like a slight out-of-body experience. Like, it really didn't hurt that bad. I'm like, whoa, I totally inherited my dad's teeth drilling ability.
I have heard this, actually. There are some people where, like, because I worked at a dentist office at one point in time, there's for some people, I don't know what it is. It might be, like, a genetic marker or something, but, like, the pain medication just doesn't work for them. Like, they're resistant to it.
So I feel like I have a pretty high pain threshold, but at the same time, if someone's stuck a swab up my nose. And it's not just putting it in the front part of your nose, right? It has to go all the way to the back for this COVID test. Is that true?
Yeah.
See, I would not like that at all.
Depends on how they're doing it. Because now that I've had a few of them, the worst one in my experience is if you go to one of the drive-through locations and they do it while you're in your car, the angle is so much worse there. Then, as opposed to if you're like sitting on a chair in an office or standing up or whatever, like the car angle, because they're like coming in through your window with it. Like, I was just like, oh, this is horrible. But the other ones I've had, even when they're going pretty deep up there, it was not as bad as the car angle one.
All right.
Yeah, it's not comfortable. I wouldn't say like it's enjoyable by any means, but it's also like your nose feels weird and you cry, but then it's over and the uncomfortableness goes away. Like, a few minutes later.
All right. So you hold it against the guys for showing a physical reaction to the testing. I don't
think I show it, like, hold it against them necessarily, but well, maybe I am a little bit. I do think it's also like in this time when so many people are like paranoid about COVID related things too, that I'm like, oh, now you're making it look even worse than it is, which might prevent somebody who has symptoms from getting tested. If they're like, oh no, I'm a real baby about pain, I can't do it, I'll just wait it out or whatever, you know, then I'm like, this isn't a good public health campaign.
See, I'd probably rather get blood drawn.
That's a good point.
I have no problem with needles either, so it's like I'd probably just rather have a blood test. Do they do a blood test thing first?
I think they, for the antibodies one, they can, like, the thing to see if you've already had it, I think, could be a blood test. I've never done that one though, so I'm not positive.
It shows you, it shows you that these guys, I mean, it showed me that these guys probably don't care about COVID at all, right, too. Which, if I was Claire, I'd be like,
lots of people are dying from COVID. They generally are older people. If you're young and healthy like these guys, then
I don't
blame them for not really caring, because it doesn't, they're not the target.
I do blame them, because they're the reasons the old people die, and they're the reasons that there is one random. I mean, okay, so what you're saying is they only care about themselves, which is my point.
That's
kind of what you said.
Okay. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that the world is extremely lethal in a lot of ways. They could have died driving to La Quinta.
I don't like this argument. Because it makes people like that even more like self-righteous about their selfishness. Like, they're so selfish about, that's the problem, is that they're selfish.
Yeah.
I agree that I might have had it, you might have had it, and nothing happened to us. I understand. But like, it's showing me that they don't really care, right? Caitlin, is that what it kind of told you?
Yeah, I think there were definitely some, I mean, it's hard to tell because obviously you're only getting these small snippets of information, but some of the way that the men talked about the isolation period too made it very much seem like they haven't had to isolate at all before, right? Which either means that like they live with other people, or, you know what I mean? Like, but it made me be like, oh, you haven't been in a situation where you've had to be alone and not socializing before. Which could either mean that, you live with other folks, or it could mean that you weren't ever taking this seriously and you were still socializing the whole time. And like, and I mean, I'm assuming this isn't a deal breaker for Claire because this hasn't come up at all. But for me, I wouldn't want to date somebody who wasn't taking like a public health crisis like this seriously. You know what I mean? And not just because, I think like Craig, what you're saying is they're not the folks who are likely to die from it, right? Which for the most part is true. They're probably not. But that would make me feel like this person doesn't care about society as a whole, right? That like, that they're not worried about protecting other people just because they're not the main risk factor. And that's like, that's upsetting, right? Like, that's not an ideal quality in a partner for me. I care about other people and want them to be safe. So, so I would want to be dating somebody who feels the same way.
Right. And if you take the demographics, I mean, despite the political aspect of this, of who cares and doesn't care about COVID, it's going to be young men, 20-something, 20s. Men in their 20s are like just 100% more selfish than like most anyone else. Like, they are all about them all the time. Maybe that's just a young people too, young Americans. I don't know. But dang, if young people don't care, Like, mm-hmm. it's insane, right? Like, they just don't care. They just don't. Yeah. It's just all about them. So, okay.
Let's play a clip.
We will. We got to get to it. We can't just play a clip.
Just play the clip, and let's move on to the next thing. Play the clip.
Okay, I want to move on to the next thing, but let me set it up, please. Okay. I am so interested in the fact that The Bachelor show, and I feel like they're doing this right, they know that we know things because that spoiler was unavoidable. And I like that they're setting it up like a romantic comedy with two famous leads that at the the start of the movie hate each other or whatever. I mean, in this case, they don't. But they're like, you know, the two leads are going to get together. You don't know when, you don't know how, but that's what you're watching for. So I thought that that was super interestingly cut together. Like, they're not giving us the standard Bachelor cut. They're giving us the, like, you know what's going to happen. How is it going to happen is the question. Well, that's just one part. But what I did, she tried to kiss Dale Moss. He, like, pulled back. Now, if there was a cringe moment the whole episode, that is my, crap. I do not want to say so cringe. So cringe. I couldn't even take that. Whew. Like, anyway, I hope that they keep on with this kind of romantic
pretending that they don't movie know each other already, you mean?
Well, pretending that they're like they're obviously focusing in on this one love story early on. They know that we know, mm-hmm. which is good. We're not pretending anymore. You know, And in with the pretending thing and with, like, who knows and who talks or, you know, what we already should know or don't know at this point, I think it's interesting. Craig, me and you have talked about this before, but we've related as a podcast the house as, like, a house of cannibals. The Bachelor Mansion or the show itself is, like, a bunch of cannibals. You know, you go and live in a house with a bunch of cannibals, and you're like, who's going to eat me? Don't you eat me. Can I sleep? Don't you eat me? Like, you know, you're nervous, but there's this kind of underlying rules, right? Of, like, when you shouldn't eat each other. I feel like the Bachelor Mansion is a lot like that, or in this case, whatever, La Quinta, because you go on with everyone on there seem to have gone on. I mean, everyone with disingenuous motives. But who do you call out? Like, who's hungry in this house? And who are you going to eat? So I am always like, we're trying to find that line. And what mental gymnastics are the men playing to pretend to be interested in Claire and also promote their brand or the thing they're trying to do? So I thought it was so interesting. And this is what happened to Luke P on his season. Did you guys hear that he got sued by producers?
Right.
Something all the most of the contestants do, but he got singled out because they didn't like him, he didn't like them, and he did something and they were like, let's retaliate, as an example and as a FU to that guy that we didn't like. So I thought, like, I love that there's this, like, obviously deep understanding, like, don't call me out and I won't call you out about trying to promote ourselves, but do we pick a person at random to call out and decide that they're fair game, or do the producers egg us on about it? And that's what happened with Yosef and Tyler. The other side of that is that said, I'm going to resolve this, and she did absolutely nothing to resolve it, just wanted to hear, like, platitudes, and then went, okay, bye, guys. You guys keep that argument going over me, please. Okay, bye.
Well, it was night one, to be fair. She had lots going on.
Well, I also read it as she didn't actually give a shit about either one of those guys and was basically like, well, I guess I'm going to have this conversation about these two men getting into some sort of discussion over, like, who's DMing people on Instagram and if they're doing it or not, but my read on it is, like, she's already so in on Dale. that she's like, I don't give a shit about either of these guys. So I've had the conversation. I can just leave now. Who gives a shit? I'm not picking either one of them. And then she just keeps Yosef because the producers want him for drama, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. But why did she even try? You know, why even try? Tyler C was giving me major Lee from Rachel's season vibes. Like, he left the mansion not saying, I wish I could have gotten to know Claire better. He's like, someone's going to take Yosef down. And if it's not going to be me, it'll be someone else. Like, he was pissed about this guy staying and not in his, in quote unquote, his place.
Yes. Okay.
So,
play the clip.
Rachel, there's nothing, there's no clip.
There's no clip.
I have this clip, which I've been dying to play.
They're fighting over me.
So that? do you guys remember Daria?
Yes, from I knew MTV? Exactly what that was when you played it.
That was
Quinn
Daria?
Morgendorfer.
Quinn Morgendorfer. Okay. Well, I have the whole clip, but this whole clip, just Quinn Morgendorfer as a character is
the
Claire
sister,
to me.
Right?
The sister.
Stop it! Stop fighting! This is horrible. They're fighting over me.
Yeah, okay. I could see that's a funny take on how Claire was acting. I like it.
This is gonna be her the whole season. Like, she finally has a room full of people willing to listen to her unhinged self and the humble brag. And you guys sacrificed so much just for me. Oh my gosh, I am so humble brag about it. It's Instagram personified, and I hate Instagram for this reason. So here we are, right in the middle of it. Like, someone is actually like a walking embodiment of all these entitled letterboard people on Instagram. And here we are. She is it. It's like, it is Quinn Morgendorfer, though. Like, the second, like the 2.0. So do you, Caitlin, do you want to kind of describe who she was on Daria?
Oh, all right. So Craig, did you not watch Daria?
No, I watched Daria.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I wasn't like a fan of the show. I've seen it.
Not a fan of the show.
I mean, I wasn't not
a fan
of the show.
It's only the best show. Yeah, I watched it so much growing up. But yeah, Quinn is Daria, you know, the main character, Daria's sister, who's like this really popular girl who's very airheaded. And she constantly has this series of like three boyfriends at all time. Like, it's like Jamie, Jeffy, and some other J name. I'm totally forgetting now.
That's so funny you remember the names.
It's like Josh, Jamie, Jeffy, or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's like one like of her main storylines is like, these guys are constantly just like, no, I'm going to date Quinn. I'm going to hold her books. And she's so into like just having these guys that she doesn't give a shit about at all. Like, they're just like cute, popular guys. But yeah, she's really into like having just kind of the adulation of these guys. It helps raise her up and make her, you know, feel even better, especially with like, she has a rivalry with, oh God, what's her name? The most popular
Brittany.
Girl in school.
Brittany.
No. One with the brown sort of like.
Oh, right. The one that's like, oh, Quinn, you need yes. like that. Yeah, I forget her name.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I totally forget her name. But yeah, there's this girl who's like, she's the queen bee, and Quinn was like the new girl coming in. So they have sort of this rivalry.
Wow,
Quinn's mentor friends help bring her up in that rivalry. You know, like, she has all these guys.
Daria's family leaves Beavis and Butthead high school world and goes into her own like more clean cut cartoon high school world. I mean, like, the lines on the cartoon, like actually literally what I mean. But it's very different show than Beavis and Butthead. So I just think it's so interesting that there's this like whole backstory to this girl that like was born out of, you know, like a short on MTV. And so, yeah, I can see why me and Caitlin would totally be all
well,
in
this
on
is old
show,
school
like the
Bachelor Masters, because our long-term listeners will remember we used to talk movies and TV shows all the time on the podcast when Chris was a co-host, because he was a screenwriter, so had all this insider knowledge on how plots are made and what it means and meanings and stuff like that. So, yeah, it feels good. We're connecting to our past here.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're looking at it this way, because I thought we'd like lose you. You'd glaze over. We'd be like, and then on Daria, we did this.
I could just shut off my mic and hang up, and probably no one would notice. Except for Wanda would notice.
I'm glad we brought you in, even through that back door of like pop culture.
I mean, Daria was fun. When was that show on? Because I was probably preoccupied with other stuff. I didn't like, oh, Daria's on. I got to sit down and watch it. But if it was on late at night,
it's like 90s.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, late 90s, early 90s, 2000s.
I guess like early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a young, horny male
doing what young, horny males do. Craig.
Yeah, not watching clever TV, it turns out. That's not what they do.
I was watching The Real World big time back then, I think.
Oh my God, exactly.
Which is probably why I watched Daria. It was probably on after The Real World or something.
That's true. Well, here's kind of the thing in my eyes, personified too, when she talks to Blake. Weird Beard Blake. What last name for
Blake Moynes? I double checked this.
Moynes.
Blake Moynes. The other one is Monar. He's the guy who has kind of like a big tufty hair.
But we're gonna call him Weird Beard Blake.
The one that messaged her, and then she said to him,
"Taking the risk for something you believe in and for something you care about." I mean, take the risk every single time.
What the hell?
You were the only man that did that. And I cannot even tell you how much that meant to me.
I like how the music sounds like the music from Titanic.
Yeah. What the hell does that mean? Take the risk for something you believe in.
Well, I don't know if you have this clip. I don't think you do. But my favorite scene, my favorite moment was when she's talking to Dale. And Dale says, "I'm an empath."
Oh, yeah, I know.
And she replies,
"Me too.
Me too."
Oh, man. You know, she's
so in deep with this.
I do not want to give her any advice. But there's a reach. Okay, so her take is that she's 39. Therefore, she's honed in on what she wants. She's ready. My take is you're 39 and you haven't figured it out yet. Maybe you're wrong and your instincts are wrong and you need to stop trying to make this guy fit whatever you want. And it's a disheartening message for people for you to be this wrong and think you're this right. She's setting herself up for like the worst fall ever because it doesn't matter what comes out of this guy's mouth. She's like falling over herself, trying to like jump on him. And it's cringe TV. And like, we're lucky she's the bachelorette and it's not the other way around because he's kind of at the mercy of her, but he was not interested. Like, we talked about the kiss already, but dang, like, that whole thing. She could have said anything. Actually, I collect World War II memorabilia.
Blake?
Dale. Dale could have said anything.
Wait, hold on. There's a couple things you're saying. You think Dale's not interested in Claire?
He didn't seem to want to kiss her.
But isn't Dale the one that we think she ends up with?
He didn't seem to want to kiss her.
See, well, I have a different thought on that, I guess.
Yeah, I think maybe we have the same thought, Caitlin. I think it's that he's trying hard to pretend that they didn't have direct message love before the show started.
But that's Dale. Blake was the one who taught. Okay, so you're saying Dale and Blake both messaged
Dale.
Her.
Well, if we're to believe Reality Steve, Dale has been
communicating. I have not looked this up.
We talked about this on the countdown last week.
Not really, though, because we didn't want to mention that name because we don't know me and Caitlin didn't want to. And I know I didn't know. I try not to look up.
I think Dale and Claire have been communicating. They're in love already or whatever, you know, smitten with each other because they've been sending love letters to each other. Kind of like
before that. The show even started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're trying to pretend that that's not the case.
I'm still doing the spoiler free version, and when they said that Blake, Weird Beard Blake, and her had been communicating, I thought that was the communication that was the only communication, and that's what she said too.
So I think the Blake communication was something that I hadn't heard at all before this. That was a total surprise. And actually, her speech that you played reminds me of, you remember McKenna on Peter's season when she has the fight with Tammy and she's like, I found my damn self or whatever.
Yeah.
It reminds me of how McKenna had so clearly practiced those lines in a mirror, and Claire's speech sounded very much to me like she had prepared a speech specifically for this conversation with Blake and practiced it. And it was like a Hallmark movie kind of line, right? To be like, you always take that risk, you know, like, I think she wrote like a little script to be like, this is deep and important and I'm going to say it here. I think with the Dale and her situation, so the rumors are that they were talking beforehand in some way, but it's not, they claim that they didn't. I think is still like that Claire and Dale say that that didn't happen. The only guy she spoke to was Blake, but people are very much doubting her word on that. And their kiss thing.
Well, then even more reason for them to have had kissed. Like, wouldn't that be an easier kiss then if they had talked beforehand?
I think, in my surveillance, I don't think that he's not interested in her. I think that at the point of this filming, at least, she's way, way, way more interested in him than he is in her. Like, she's basically like the second she laid eyes on him, she was like, full on in, this is the guy. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think he's still much more in that regular mode of like, oh, we're gonna talk a bit and we're gonna get to know each other. And I don't think he saw her moving in for the kiss that first day, like, at all.
Right.
And I think it was that he was probably surprised and like a little taken aback by it.
Well, if you get the first impression, Rose, you're gonna have to kiss her. So
yeah, I guess you could also think it might be weird in the sense that, although this didn't happen with her kiss with Blake, because she kissed Canadian wildlife manager Blake too, which seemed like a normal kiss. There wasn't any pulling back. But when she went to go kiss Dale, I was like, well, maybe he's weird about it because of not having like kissed anybody in months too. And like, maybe it's weird, you know, like I'm the so COVID sure. aspect to be like, oh God, I didn't expect a lip on lip thing. You know?
Does he have COVID? Oh my God.
No, come on. Okay. Despite what I agree with you guys on a lot, and I wouldn't want to make this like assumption, so because it could be a million things, to like gut instinct it, that's weird to pull back. You're on a reality. I mean, maybe everything that you guys are saying is true. They were talking and it was awkward, and he hasn't been out in a club in like 2 months, and she, you know, but she like grabbed his face, and there wasn't much to assume other than what was happening. And he was still like, oh, I'm nervous. Like, the first thing that came out of his mouth was kind of like a, oh, what should I do? Okay, I could say I'm nervous. It was so weird. I don't know.
It was an uncomfortable moment for sure. Like, yeah, I don't know what to make of it at this point either. I feel like knowing what we all know about how her show goes down, and like that this is the guy, right? Like, you've got to assume that he must be into it. But yeah, the pullback was kind of weird, because in that situation, like, she'd given him the first impression, she was putting her hands on his face, like, I don't know what else. Yeah, like, it very much seems like the kiss is coming, you should prepare for the kiss, you know.
I mean, maybe he's clueless. I would love to give a million like cis hetero woman excuses here, which I think me and Caitlin have talked about that we do for men, but I'm not going to, because I hate Claire. So I'm going to say it was an unwanted kiss.
Okay.
But I did save you a clip, Craig. I cut this out with you in mind.
Ooh, okay. Let's hear it.
It feels so good. Like, they fill me up.
She said, this feels so good. They fill me up. That's what she said about the room full of
play
men.
Play one more time here.
It feels so good. Like, they fill me up.
Is it? I'm trying to figure out why you put this out for me. Because she says like?
No, because she like says something totally gross out of context. You mean, it's like fill an eighth grade joke.
See, my mind did not immediately go there, believe it or not.
That's why. Well, I mind it.
They fill me up.
They fill me up. Like, why would you even say any? I mean,
I don't like the phrasing. Phrasing is bad.
Yeah.
We should promise each other that the next time we hang out with somebody, we'll say like, "You fill me up," and just see how they react.
Yeah.
Like next time I'm hanging out with you, Ezier, I'll turn to Mark and I'll say, "Mark, you know what? You really fill me up."
But then he's pouring you like a beer, and you're like, right. "Thanks, fill me up, bro."
Fill me up.
So you could you always use up, it Mark. the right way.
That's funny. Okay, fashion roundup.
So wrong. Fashion roundup.
Oh yeah, I've got some thoughts.
This is the fashion roundup.
Craig likes and Caitlin.
We got to re-record it.
I mean, that would be you, Craig, because that's you singing. So you need to re-record one. That's
when COVID's over, Ezier. We got to go back to the recording studio
back,
and add
back
Caitlin.
In the studio. Yeah.
This is the fashion roundup. Craig and Caitlin like to talk about what people are wearing. Like that?
Oh my God, Craig. No wonder I was in the studio with you. I kept telling him, like, cut the, like, syllables out of
that. Yeah, it's tough to get the timing right. Yeah. There was that one that was really tough to get the timing right on. Okay. Her dress is awful. I've been trying to figure out what cut that dress is at the time. It's kind of a halter top, right? But not really. I don't know what you would call an A-frame.
It was like form-fitting. Yeah. Like form fitting?
No. Whatever the cut is, where it starts at your neck and then goes out, then below your armpits. That's what really bugged me.
I think you are talking about like a halter neck, sort of like a halter top kind of thing, right?
So
because her back is open, and there's like a little tie at the top.
Yeah. And her it made her shoulders look really like hunched forward all the time, and it's just. And I mean, people online on Twitter, like, you know, when the episode was going on, were equating it to a disco ball. That was less worried me less than the cut. The cut just seemed so unflattering. That's all.
See, I like thought, the, like, and I think Ezier, you and I are on the same ears. Page with this. Sorry, I keep on talking over you. It's like my New Yorker conversational style. You know me, I'm a New Yorker.
An East
that's
Coast
a callback to
an East Coast New Yorker.
Yes, I'm an East Coast New Yorker, and that's strong opinions about everything. Sorry, you should say what you were going to say again, and I won't interrupt you this time.
No, I was just going to say that I like. I don't necessarily like it on a dress, but I like it like on a mosaic. The kind of mosaic pattern of something cut up and then fitting together.
Yeah, but it'd be nice. Like,
I like it better in like a kitchen.
Yeah,
like the sparkly cutout bits. I thought, because Craig, on our group message that we have, Craig had said he watched this episode before you and I did, Ezier.
True.
And he had specifically said, like, he hated this dress so much. It was so terrible. And so I had that in my head before the show started. And then when I saw the dress, I was like, this isn't bad. Why is Craig upset about it?
Really?
No. I thought that, too. And people were obsessed online. Too is what I read after. I'm like, why? It's just whatever. It's just a normal one dress.
It looked very like
something flashy.
It looked very like regular sort of pageanty kind of dress to me, which a lot of the women have worn on many of the seasons. So it didn't seem like unusual to me at all, you know?
And I mean, don't get me wrong. It wasn't anything else about the dress. Like it fit her well. It showed off her features, but it's just the cut on the top. And how it made her shoulders and neck look. I felt just really, it just made her look all poofy and hunched over. And I just thought that I wouldn't pick that dress if I were her. And I use the word awful because to me it was awful. It's just an awful pick. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
I did not think it was bad or like, it wasn't something that I would wear myself, but like didn't seem noticeably too different to me than stuff like the Hannah Ann wore on Peter's season. I feel like that's a very Hannah Ann style dress. And I didn't notice the shouldery thing that you're talking about at all. Like it just didn't register for me in any way.
Yeah. I think after we've had Hannah B, her being the lead, the Bachelorette, her fashion was so cool to me that now I am ruined for all other fashion because I used to just accept it. Like Claire seems to have a very JoJo fashion. JoJo's fashion was very now, but very dated now. Like, I could tell it's early, or it's like whatever it is. I don't like it, but whatever. But now that Hannah B has totally changed the game for me, now I'm critical. And no, I don't like it. No, I don't love it, but whatever. Like, you know, that's typical of Bachelor fashion. I think they give him a few choices. I liked the, Craig, men's fashion.
The guy's
fashion
not
stuff.
Wearing socks.
Oh, no, not anymore. I used to like that, and now I'm so over it.
Well, they really made a point of showing the guys.
I know Bennett is like a American Psycho, you know, Patrick Bateman totally is. But why do they wear the little, and I like it, the scarf, the white scarf.
Hmm. Oh, like, my God, that? His fucking black tie, white scarf thing. So I have so many notes on this.
I like it, but I get the
hate Bennett
killer.
So much. Like, definitely a serial killer.
Which one was Bennett? What's his job?
He's the Harvard
guy.
Oh, the Harvard guy. Sorry.
He's
the H-bomb.
He's H-bomb. Yeah.
The H-bomb.
The best game to play is to pretend like you don't know what Harvard is to like a Harvard grad.
That's
the best game you'll ever play. Be like, what?
Harvard. Harvard? Is that a junior college?
There's a street? Or... Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
College in your local town? Oh,
yeah.
You'll have
this
so much
guy,
fun.
Like, I have so many notes on him just because, I mean, obviously you can't.
By the way,
like
he didn't say
he's
one
fundamentally
word.
Unlikable.
He
didn't say
didn't
what
didn't say anything, though. He didn't say one word.
Right.
And we, like, I don't even hate him, but I'm wondering about that. Scarf. Like, what's the point? Is it for
because
what?
He went to Harvard.
It's
they
a very
scarves.
Fancy, like, it's a British-y fancy kind of way to dress. Like, this is what you would wear to, like, a black tie event if you were like,
totally.
I'm a fashion boy, you know? Like,
yes, you'd have a pipe, and you'd be like, yes.
I totally get the like, cultural connotations. I totally get the, like, class issue. But I'm wondering, sometimes men's fashion has a point as opposed to women's fashion. So sometimes things like that do something.
He's
like they're
virtue signaling
for something
that he's part of the Harvard upper class.
Okay.
Yeah, that's I think literally all it does is signal that he's like a rich guy who has status and knows about things. But I wrote this note because I found this very funny. Is when he pulls up in the Rolls Royce, obviously, of course he does. That's him. That you know they show the men inside looking at the arrivals for some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they show several men looking at Bennett, and they're all like, oh my God, he's in a Rolls Royce. One guy says, and I wrote down the exact quote because it was making me laugh so hard, he said, those loafers are fantastic. And some of them commented on his scarf too, like they were like, oh my God, these men thought he was like the coolest shit ever. They were so into it.
So this is an interesting change in narrative, Caitlin, and I'm really, really glad you brought it up, because here's the thing. When The Bachelor started off, that was the desirable man on the franchise. That's the man we're, as the audience, are supposed to pine after. There's been a prince. There's been a kind of legacy guys or like trust fund babies as The Bachelor. Now that they can't really do that because there's a lot of issues with class and how'd you get there and where'd you inherit it from, now they have to shift that want over to the contestants so that we know there's still status there, but it's not coming from producers. I'm so interested in this because he is like classic, I think, to a lot of us, is just a lot of like red, you know, red flag. Your parents are probably rich. Are you really talented? Are you really anything to do with anything that, you know, you portray yourself as? But the guys, especially the guys being alpha males, maybe they do actually like think like, whoa, who's this man? But at the same time, like how much of that is put on through the producers so that the producers can give their like talking points out? Any reaction? Did I get cut off?
No, example. I think that's interesting because I was kind of like, I didn't see it as a producer thing at all. It's just kind of like, for me, the way that Bennett dresses is like, oh, that's not a thing I'm into at all, right? Everything that he represents is not a thing that I'm into. So it was fascinating to me that the other men were seeing it as like, oh, how are you going to compete with this guy? You know, and I was like,
yeah,
I think there's also an element of sometimes men really like cis hetero men do not really understand what women find attractive. Right.
Well, hold your horses here.
He's playing a game for the other contestants. It's not necessarily for Claire's benefit. Yes. He's
freaking them out. He's like gaming them to be like, check me out. I'm rich and powerful. Well,
women wear clothes for other women, not for men. Right. That's the
sometimes
stereotype. Yeah. So he's wearing it for the other guys. He's peacocking. There we go.
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like in my life, I do not know a woman who would see that outfit and be like, oh, hello. You know what I mean?
Hello. Yes.
But Harvard. Oh, you're doing the voices.
Well, I'm trying to do a voice. I'm doing the Seinfeld.
Yeah, you're trying to do the Seinfeld. Hello. But yeah, but to the men, this was like a thing, apparently. And that was interesting to me. But also, the men, like, there's some trends happening here for the men that you could see in this episode, right? Caitlin, that like what
okay, like, you as an East Coast New Yorker, you have a very strong connotation with what that outfit means. Me as a nouveau
you would never see not really wearing that here.
Yeah, you would never see anyone wearing that. It doesn't mean anything over here. It all, and honestly, as an outfit taken out of context, it's cool. Like, sorry, it is. But damn, I totally understand the like constraints it puts you in over there in your, like, you know, colonial 13 colonies thing. Like, I'm not taking that away from you.
Well, definitely, and I guess I, like, should also point out here that I lived in 007. Boston, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I have met many of these men. I also worked at the H-bomb, so I'm familiar with it.
The H-bomb. Did anyone call it the H-bomb?
Oh, God, it's actually a thing.
Oh, really?
Like,
what Bennett said, cool, dropping the H-bomb, that's a thing that people talk about at Harvard, to be like, oh, people get so weird when we talk about, like, our super fancy education. So we have to be really coy about it and say, like, you know, you went to school in Cambridge, not that you went to Harvard. And, like, they literally call it dropping the H-bomb. That's not a thing he made up. And, like, I didn't attend. I just worked there. So I'm more of, like, a servant in that world. But... Right. But I absolutely have met men like this. Men who are like, there's no way that guy's not a legacy student at Harvard. You know, like, no way.
Sure.
So yeah, the connotation that you're talking about is like, that connotation immediately beamed out to me. The second he said literally anything, I was like, that guy, I know who this man is. I hate him on sight, you know? But his outfit also very much screamed the type of person that he is and wants to be perceived to be, which is somebody who is extremely, like, high class, wealthy, educated, that he's, you know, the kind of guy who'd be like, oh, I have a friend who's friends with somebody in the British royal family, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So it's interesting to me. I did not realize that was like a very East Coast reading of this, to be like, I know exactly what all of this means and I hate him for it.
Yeah. I've never legit met someone like that, but, like, I know they exist, and there's some people here from the East Coast that will tell you they will have the same, like, visceral, like, disgust when they talk about those people.
For sure. That guy.
But standalone outfit.
He was in one of the secret clubs.
Yeah, he's in Skull and Bones or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, oh God, I can't remember. I forget all of them, but yeah, there's one. Oh, no, that's where it's like, Yale, presidents that were in. Sorry. Yeah, that one's Yale. Harvard has like, I can't remember. There's something like Porcine Society or whatever. I don't know. They have the same thing with the secret clubs. And I guarantee this guy was in one of them. If he wasn't, then he desperately wanted to be, and he's compensating very hard for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, but I think fashion a lot of alone, Caitlin. What's that?
I was saying, well, what about just, I mean, okay, there's too much connotation. There's too much like woven in obvious status shouting through the outfit. But outfit alone, standout outfit, huh?
Outfit alone, you remember Chris from Chris and Brie in Listen to Your Heart?
Oh, the scarf guy. Yeah.
Yes, the scarf guy. That was one of my first thoughts, too. I was like, oh, it's like Chris with his scarves, except Chris was not doing like the white like the black tux kind of vibe with it. He just always really loved to have an open scarf on like every outfit. And I didn't mind it on him. So I think you are right that it is probably like the class connotation, snobbery kind of stuff. Because on Chris, I was like, oh, I'm kind of making fun of him for it, but I didn't always hate it. Sometimes it was kind of like, oh, that's a nice accessory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it worked. He's trying to accessorize and it didn't always work. And
yeah,
it
there
stood
were
out to
sometimes people. That where it's like, Chris, why'd you just throw that on there? Like, why'd you do that? But yeah. He had a style and that's something. I did want to talk about Easier. I thought about you so much with this particular one.
Okay.
Men loving short pants. They love a cropped pant, you know?
Oh, yes. That's exactly what I was going to say right now.
They're called flood pants, I think.
I think you're like 50 years late on that one, Greg.
Greg.
That's what they're called.
But the thing is now is that they're a different cut. They're purposefully cut, so you don't wear... Okay. So I have a question about this, and Craig, maybe because you're a man, you can answer this.
Yeah.
Someone told me, someone was describing a rich guy to me once, and he basically kind of glossed over this, but he said it, and I was like extremely like honed in on what he said was these guys wear shoes with no socks. Really expensive shoes with no socks because they can just throw their shoes away. And it's like a status symbol. It's like having a lawn. Like he didn't say the lawn thing, but that's how that when I heard that, I was like, wait, what? So guys can only wear shoes with no socks for a limited amount of time and then throw them out because they start to smell bad. Well, like, is that true?
I mean, maybe that's how it started, but now it's just a fashion thing. I don't know. I've never heard that.
You don't know.
Well, I wear the same pair of shoes. I'm like communist USSR with my shoes, man. I wear the same shoes every day until they fall apart 2 years later, and then I get a new pair of shoes.
Yeah, I'm not talking about you, obviously, with your cargo pants and your V-neck and your... I'm talking about this like look that I used to think was super cute, and now I'm like so over it because everyone wears it. And Caitlin's right, like where I saw it and I was like, used to be cute, now everyone has it.
I'd much rather them wear it like flood like or whatever, where it's up, than when they wear them when they clearly haven't tailored them. There's nothing that bugs me more than, and this goes for cargo pants or dress pants or jeans, when it's too long, you know, because you buy it off the rack, they're always going to be too long. You need to get them tailored so it falls properly on your shoe.
Tailor your cargo pants?
I can tailor my cargo pants. It depends on the cargo pant.
Oh, okay. You do it. You don't send it to a tailor.
No, I have. Yeah. No. There's a tailor. I walk to the tailor.
You send it to your, like, H&M cargo pants to, like, a
Not H&M.
Okay, whatever.
If you buy a $50 pair of REI pants, they should fall correctly on your shoe. They shouldn't be all bunched up down there. But sometimes
it does bother me.
Some of them,
cargo
pants are meant to be folded up though. If you fold it up, there's designs on the inside. So those I'll just fold up.
Yeah, you're classic Craig.
I love this like alternative reality in which I'm picturing Bachelor contestants who are all just dressed like Craig and with Craig-specific fashion.
Be red? Yeah. That'd be the coolest show
And they're
ever.
Rolling
the
up their cargo pants
V-neck
to, like, show the
you've
pattern.
Ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that Love Island, though? Don't they just come out in tank tops and board shorts and stuff?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
I'm going to
have
to rewatch to see
like
if they
no
have cargo
clothes.
Pants.
Yeah, no, they come out in like no clothes, and now that they were in Las Vegas, it was like 110, so they were like as least amount of clothes as possible.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just I love the like no sock look, but ever since someone told me that, they were describing someone, like I said, it's always stuck in my mind that it's like it's supposed to symbolize that you're so rich. I mean, that's what it symbolized to this man. That this person is so rich, they can wear Armani shoes with no socks because they can throw them away.
Well, maybe
and so,
that's
Craig,
how
I think me and you, I think, are like, you know, we both are against lawns, right?
Yes.
And what lawns mean. So everyone knows, you know, lawns are supposed to be land you don't, you're so rich that you have land you don't use for crops. Like, that's the connotation of lawns. Right. And that's kind of how this shoe, sockless shoe thing seems to be. Huh. You're so Rich, you can switch your shoes before they fall apart. You can, right. you know, throw away your shoes before they fall apart.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that exact take on it before, but it does make a certain amount of sense, right? That, like, if you are constantly barefoot in your shoes, they are going to get gross and smell bad. So, like, either you just live with that or you have enough expendable income where you're just replacing them constantly. But the short pant look, well, I noticed because so many of them had it, and particularly that one really, really tall guy who I can't remember his name, but he didn't get to move on. His were super noticeable because he was so tall. And so the cut of the pant was so short on him, I guess, that like they were almost like capri pant level length.
Yeah. You know?
Like it was like an extreme version.
Yeah. It's only cute when you're sitting down. If you're standing up and they're still short, that doesn't look good, right?
Yeah, you gotta have like a little ankle is kind of cute, but when it gets way too much, then it's like, oh, what is that? What are you doing? But yeah, I immediately thought of you because of on Peter's season, the outfit he wore to go break up with Hannah Ann after the season. I said it looked like a Newsies outfit, and you were like, I love that outfit.
Yes,
and
I totally
it was that
do.
He had cropped pants with like ankle boots, right? Like that
with
was his bottom half. Yes.
Well, I think you said Oliver Twist, and I was
I
love
Oliver
it.
Twist. Yeah,
beautiful on a man.
And
like it is.
Like they're doing sort of that, but because it's summer, it's not a boot with a cropped look, right? It's like a loafer with a cropped look, which is a different look. And I don't. Some of them can carry it off. Some it's like a little too short. But it was just interesting to me that it was like almost every single man had that the cropped pant going on.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be a stocky build or like kind of a bigger build and pull that off. You have to be kind of a thinner frame.
Right.
Just FYI.
Just to any men considering the crop pant look.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of those other fashion that stood out to me. I mean, I guess we could mention Jay. I wrote down his name so I would remember this. Wore the straight jacket the whole night, which I suppose
really
is related
weird.
To fashion. I hated it.
Yeah, it was like he didn't have a friend to take it off for him or something.
Right.
Yeah,
and it was a bad the pun didn't even make sense.
Yeah, it was like
the joke
failed.
Didn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the joke
totally
was bad.
Missed,
then he wore it for like 12 hours. It was very weird.
Yeah, I mean, how did he drink his champagne? But the I missed completely Kenny. He wore a t-shirt, right? The guy who's all sweaty.
Yes, with her dogs.
I missed that. I must not have been. I must have been tweeting, but I didn't know to go back and rewind and watch it. So
yeah,
I,
he got a custom t-shirt made.
Okay.
With Claire's dogs on it, like the faces of her dogs that he wore underneath his like little blazer.
Oh.
Okay. And then like she was like, "Oh, can I pet my dog?" So she could like rub his pec/ab area.
Right.
I don't like that guy.
Not the worst thing in the world. I
gross. Yeah. That was.
I mean, it's a gambit that I guess worked for. But...
Kenny's gambit.
I mean, yeah.
Kenny's gambit.
Whatever.
All right. Look, we're way long. That was a good fashion roundup. It was a good episode all around. Should we think about cutting it off here?
Can I say like one more thing? Because I wrote down another specific quote. Because it's very Freudian. Oedipus complex kind of stuff, I guess. Jason, one of the other like football player guys, right after he met Claire and then he went back inside and you know they do their like to camera thing, he said, "Claire is the most beautiful girl I've seen since my mother."
I know, yeah, that was I was up getting some water or something and I was walking and he goes, "She's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen," and I go, "Oh yeah," and then "since my mother," and I'm like, "Oh
yeah,
no."
Exactly, like I was like, "Oh, that's nice." Yeesh. Oh god, since you're a mom.
Why would you say that?
Very,
I mean, you can't say that unironically.
No, you can't, but like yeah, it just reminds me a lot
after.
Of the women.
He's like, ah, ha, ha.
Yeah. The women who say like they're looking for a woman, they're looking for a man like their father reminded me so much of that, but like kind of even creepier in certain ways, because when the women say that, they don't usually say that looks like their father. It's like, oh, that has the qualities of their father, that, you know, things like that. They're not like, oh, he's the most handsome man I've seen since my dad. And you'd be like, call child services for retroactive child abuse. That's wrong.
Yeah. Looks aren't, you should never, you talk about everything else except looks, because that's super creepy.
It's
like, you subconsciously pick people looks. Yeah, you do subconsciously pick looks, though. if not traits.
Right.
But you don't ever address that in polite society. Like, what is wrong with this guy?
Yeah. Like, he's just like, my mom is so smoking hot, you guys. I can't emphasize this enough. My mom is super hot. And you're like, I gotta go. I'm very uncomfortable.
All right, you guys, good episode. We already did the social media thing, but if you haven't followed us in the last hour, follow us now on social media and leave a review on the Apple iTunes podcast app. Anything else?
No.
We'll try to record
referencing Wednesday. Daria, though.
Yeah, Daria. We'll try to record Wednesday next week so we can get this up a day earlier. This week didn't work out, so we're recording on a Thursday. But yeah. I guess we'll just see y'all next week.
Yeah, at Bachelor Masters, everybody. Bye. Bye.